Welcome, everybody, to tonight's Wine About History podcast. This is your co-host, Patty. Max has finally let me back in the studio after a little bit of an absence. I'm really happy to be here. And Max is grinning at me sheepishly. Anyway, tonight, since this is Wine About History, we're drinking some wine. And tonight, we're drinking Apothic Rosé. Do we have a vintage or a year on that?
2017. It's really good. I recommended it in the last episode.
We're
doubling down. Yes, it's that
we're
good.
We're doubling down.
Apothic, send us wine. Apothic, please send. If you're like a CEO at a wine industry, send them an email, please.
Yeah, I am. Now, for me, for my rosé taste, this is a little heavy for me. I know you like it, but I like it. I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just saying, for me, I like their red wine better.
Yeah. So, for those of you who don't know, our whole goal of this podcast is not fame or money or Patreon subscribers or spot. We just want wine. We just want wine. That's all we want. Give us wine, please.
He's on his hands and knees begging for wine.
Yes.
Because we love the wine.
So.
But are we going to talk about.
We're going to talk about Peter Francisco, George Washington's one man army.
One man army. Yes. Okay.
I don't understand why he was the one man army in a few. He's like a character from fiction. Like he.
Wait. He's real or he's fiction?
He's real. I say okay. He's like a character from
oh,
fiction.
Oh, he's like a character. Okay, gotcha.
So he was found abandoned by a pair of sailors when he was 5 years old. He was dressed in the finest clothes of the day.
Didn't we talk about this guy already?
No.
Oh, okay. This sounds familiar. Okay, never mind. Keep going.
He was basically dressed in 1700s Gucci.
Okay.
He had silver buckles on his shoes. And the townspeople of City Point, Virginia were enthralled by this young youth who could not speak English. He spoke in this sound like Portuguese, but also Spanish weird dialect. But they picked out one phrase he kept repeating over and over again. Pedro Francisco. The City Point's patriarchs hunted down an unused bed in a wharf for him. The housewives fed him, and an old watchman looked out for him and took care of him.
Okay.
So the community got together to take care of him because it was such a crazy story. And Judge Anthony Winston investigated the matter, found he liked the young boy, and took him in as an indentured servant and raised him. And being an indentured servant was literally one step above being a slave, mm-hmm. depending on who you worked for.
Okay.
In some places they were like family, in some places they were basically treated like slaves.
Yeah.
It was a common way to deal with people who were criminals, whether they committed right or wrong.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So there have been tons of attempts to track down his heritage, I mean, because it's such a weird story. This guy this kid just shows up out of nowhere. So, Peter remembers being lured out from his childhood home, which is a mansion by the sea, because he's obviously rich, possibly noble, by Algerian pirates who tried to ransom him, but they couldn't ransom him, so they abandoned him at City Point.
Oh, well, at least they didn't kill him, so that's nice.
So, he grew to be a man under Judge Winston with a keen mind and a powerful body. He worked in the blacksmith shop. At the age of 15, Pedro was 6 feet, 6 inches, and 260 pounds.
Well, that's big for back then.
For back then, it's...
And it's kind of big for today.
It's big for today, too. Back then, most people were like 5'4", 5'3".
Yeah, tiny.
They were tiny.
Yeah, if you ever go to like some old museum or something and they show you like the beds people slept in, they're like kiddie beds.
They're like little kiddie people. So, Judge Winston loved Pedro like a son and took him to a meeting in 1775. It was at this meeting Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death."
Oh, that was a famous speech, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I think they hung him.
Yeah, I think they did too.
Nathan Hale. Too. Peter wanted to join the militia, but Judge convinced him to wait till he was 16.
That's funny.
Just wait one more year. One more year. So he was enlisted when at 16 as a private in the 10th Virginia Regiment under Colonel William Hugh. And he fought in the Battle of Brandywine on September 11th, 1777. George Washington's army met the forces of Lord Cornwallis and General Howe, who were the big bigwigs. They actually literally wore bigwigs.
Is that where
that's where the word comes from. Rich, powerful men would get syphilis from having sex with everyone. So they'd go bald and have these big wigs. People would shave their heads to put on these big wigs.
That's really gross.
It's awful. Yeah, this is why you shouldn't follow fashions and fads. Do your own thing, folks. Be true to yourself. Howe flanked the American forces and won the battle. For those of you who don't know what flank means, it comes coming around on the side.
Okay.
The 10th Virginia was late to the battle and was tasked to be the rear guard. Now, a rear guard is the people who defend the retreating enemy. It's basically not a death sentence, but it's really dangerous. You have to be very brave because you're standing and fighting when everyone else is running away.
Mm.
Everyone's getting out of Dodge because things have gone so bad. You're like, no, I'll stay. Don't worry. So they took up positions in a place called Sandy Hollow Gap, which is a declivity, kind of a gully. And
Where was this taking place? What state or...
I don't know where the Battle of Brandywine. I don't remember.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not an expert.
Well, you should be.
Oh, I should be an expert. Fine. You know what? This is why we have the computer.
Right. Let's Google let's look it right up. Now. Battle of Brandywine.
She has her arms crossed and looks at me like I just failed
just
the paper.
It's just more comfortable to sit that way. My arms crossed. Okay, here we go. We got it. Battle of Brandywine Creek. Creek. Oh, he's covering up the computer so I can't see it.
Pennsylvania.
I Chads was gonna say
Ford Township, Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
Okay, cool. I'm sure people in Pennsylvania listening are like, duh.
We knew.
We knew that. But we're in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
No Pennsylvania.
So the Virginians and the Pennsylvanians stood their ground and saved the army. George Washington had been beaten 5 times by Howe. This is why George Washington was actually... His record was 3 wins, 12 stalemates, 3 losses.
Really?
Or something like that.
Close enough. So basically 50-50.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Kind of like Packer Vikings.
We're not talking about that.
Okay, go ahead.
Welcome to the Midwest, folks. So, you'd think we'd be in Seattle like most podcasters.
No.
So, he kept his army in the field and stopped them from getting absolutely wiped out. That's where his military genius led, in getting defeated, but surviving.
Okay, I get that. Yeah.
It's a very valid tactic.
Yeah.
In fact, there's some historians who believe that this, if General Lee kept his army in the field and didn't sign the Appomattox Agreement,
mm-hmm.
and end the war, Civil War. Civil War could go on to this day.
Well, I'm glad
that's
it didn't.
That's how valid a tactic it is. Yeah. So Peter was shot in the thigh, the first of a lot of war wounds. I think he had 6. And while in the hospital, he became friends with Major General. Try to get this right, Major General Marie Joseph Paul Yves Roche Gilbert Dumortier, Marquis de Lafayette.
He could use a few more names.
Yes. Well, they had all those names because there were so many royalty, you didn't want to get anyone confused.
Of course.
Because, yeah, that's not confusing at all. The two became lifelong friends. Next battle was the Battle of Germantown, where Peter was in the middle of the combat. We don't have a lot of records of what... I can Google more about the Battle of Germantown, but we've got, like, 3 pages of notes here, so...
Okay, well, we won't.
Should we Google every detail about
Germantown's
the battle?
Germantown's in Pennsylvania. I've heard of Germantown,
okay,
Pennsylvania.
Okay, good. Now we know.
Yeah.
He was also at Valley Forge. We're in the cold. American soldiers drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled and drilled. Valley Forge is when our rabble became an army.
Okay.
It was so bad in there, they had to literally, like, have one pair of pants, and they had to pass it around in certain areas.
Shut up.
That was actually a thing. One group only had one pair of pants, and they had to give it to the guy who was on sentry duty. That's how tough our ancestors were. They were like, I'm not going to go home where it's warm and there are pants. I'm going to stay here and fight the English in my underwear.
Wow. But I think their underwear went all the way down to their ankles.
Yeah,
though,
they did have. Yeah. I don't know. That may have been the 1860s.
I'm just picturing long johns,
yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know if they had boxer shorts in the 1770s.
Bikinis. Just keep going. Keep talking. Sorry.
I'm imagining George Washington in a bikini right now. It's terrifying. He's got the sword and everything.
That would be terrifying. Maybe that's why he won those battles. People are just like, no, my God. It's a thong. We're retreating. What's this guy all about? All right, sorry to interrupt. I got way off track there.
This is my co-host that I do these things with.
For now.
For now.
Totally kicks
if any
out.
Of you want to be a co-host in a podcast,
just let Max know. All right,
my
but you got to get more.
Probably bright
though.
Red, and I'm crying at the Battle of Monmouth Courthouse, which probably took up Pennsylvania. I don't know. The drilling paid off. What would have been a loss became a tie. So they should have lost, but the British rallied. The American soldiers rallied and fended them off. And Peter was injured again. By the way, he spent 2 months in the hospital at Very Forge. I was too busy laughing to read that note. So on July 15th in 1779, Peter was chosen as part of a suicide mission.
Wow.
Yeah. He was handpicked of one of 20 warriors to assault the British fort at Stony Hill Point, maybe or maybe not in Pennsylvania, under Major General Mad Anthony Wayne, which is where John Wayne got his name.
Oh, really? Wow.
His real name was Merriam Webster.
Wow.
Which is why he was so tough, because he had to fight guys all the time growing up. His name was Merriam.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of boy named Sue thing going on. They attacked. Making way for Wayne's light infantry, they took axes to the underbrush. So the enemy knew they were coming because they heard these axes chopping. Then they made up the suicide charge up the hill. Of the 20 soldiers who went up the hill, only 3 were unharmed. Excuse me.
Ooh.
The rest were dead or wounded.
Ooh.
Peter was one of the wounded. He received a 9-inch bayonet slash across his abdomen.
Ew.
The bayonets back then were razor sharp and had a shaped in a triangular way, which is illegal now under Geneva Convention because they leave such nasty wounds.
Oh, that sounds like something out of Forged in Fire.
He killed the man that wounded him and then killed 2 others. Then he charged the fort's flagstaff and took it, and then Francisco presented the enemy flag to Lieutenant Colonel Francois Louis Tesserge de Fleury, a French army engineer who was fighting alongside the Americans. Word of Peter's bravery spread like fire, and Peter re-enlisted for a third time under Colonel Mayo.
That's not such a weird name.
It's not.
Because there's County Mayo in Ireland. There's the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. You just think of mayonnaise when you think of mayo.
That's mayonnaise.
He does like mayonnaise.
I like mayonnaise so much I get in trouble for it. So, and they marched south to help General Gates. Now, this is actually, remember that movie, The Patriot? This is where part of it opens up, the part where General Gates, the aftermath of Jump. So,
okay.
August 16th, the incompetent Gates lost horribly to Cornwallis. He marched brand new, fresh troops against battle-hardened veteran British.
Aw, that's my birthday. There was a battle on my birthday. Aww.
It's also the day Elvis died.
It's the day Elvis died, too. Kind of a bad day to be born.
The Colonial Army was absolutely shattered, and the new recruits had. They just dropped the rifles and ran. Gates fled. Gates was the first to run away. He just took off on the fastest horse he could find.
Chicken bleep.
He was a chicken bleep. Guess what Pedro Francisco tried to do? All 260 pounds of him?
Well, he's the one-man army, so I'm guessing he one-man army did.
He tried to rally the men, but they wouldn't listen to him. So he was forced to retreat to the Pine Woods. But he saw Colonel Mayo about to be bayoneted, so he shot the enemy soldier.
Cool.
A cavalry soldier spotted them and rushed forward. He demanded that Peter and Mayo surrender. Peter sidestepped his charge and bayoneted him.
With the triangle bayonet?
With the illegal triangle bayonet. Peter took the enemy horse and yelled an enemy battle cry. And this is going to sound really cliche, but it's, "Huzzah, my lads, let's go after the rebels." Tricking the enemy into thinking he's one of them, because it wasn't a matter of uniform, because there was a lot of Americans on the side of the British. They were called Tories.
Yep.
And they did terrible things.
Yeah.
Terrible things.
Yeah.
Politics is weird. So he saw Mayo captured. He was the prisoner of a redcoat. Peter killed the redcoat, gave the colonel his horse, and made him take off. The colonel didn't want to leave Peter behind, but Peter made him run away. So after all that, Peter did more. He spotted an abandoned field gun and tried to save it from the enemy. A field gun's a cannon. Type of cannon.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that. The blacksmith turned hero picked up the 1,100-pound weapon and carried it.
Okay, time out. That sounds a little folklorish. That really happened. He picked up a 1,000-pound thing.
But there was the mountain guy. He picked up, he just broke a record. He picked up a 2,000-pound log.
Well, okay. Yeah, all right. I stand corrected.
Now, this is physically possible. This is physically possible.
Okay.
Whether he actually did it, let's give him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
He collapsed under, he didn't like run away with it. He was like, huh, and just barely made it to a tree where he collapsed.
Okay. I can see that.
An enemy soldier approached him, demanded that he surrender or die. He tricked him by pretending to give him his own loaded weapon, shot him, grabbed that man's horse, and did the enemy soldier trick again.
He's so tricky.
He's a clever man. At this point, he joined a cavalry regiment, where he complained his sword was too small for him. They were fighting with something literally called a small sword back then, and they're all kind of small.
Yeah, that was on Forge and Fire, I think. The small sword. I think. I'm just trying to picture it.
I'm just going to judge people for watching. I lived Forged in Fire as a boy. Not that I'd made the swords. I just knew all those weapons. Every time they come up with a weapon, it's like, oh, it's so cool. I've never seen that or heard of that. I just fold my arms and glare at the TV. So.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'm getting caught up, though.
Yeah. So the cavalry regiment, he was under a Colonel Washington. Not to be confused with General Washington. But I think it was General Washington who heard of this predicament and had made a sword for him. It was a 6-foot-long broadsword with a 5-foot blade.
Wow.
I'm going to leave a picture picture of a similar weapon in the show notes. So on Tuesday, March, on March 1781, Cornwallis's army met General Greene's at Guilford Courthouse.
Okay.
The American army fired first two volleys, caused the chaos in the British ranks, but the enemy regrouped and broke the American lines. They rushed forward where they met Peter Francisco. A bugle sounded, which was the call for William Washington's cavalry to swarm down into the enemy ranks while they were pursuing the enemy.
Okay.
Pursuing our soldiers, Continental soldiers.
Okay.
So they were getting flanked by cavalry, which is a nightmare. That's how you lose a battle, is getting flanked by cavalry.
Yeah.
So they swarmed down where Peter Francisco killed 11 men.
Woo! Wow.
I don't believe that. Like, I can believe him, the cannon, but killing 11 men, just boom, 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 a single battle.
I've seen it in movies.
If you've seen it in movies, it must be real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw this guy. He could, like, fly through the air because he knew kung fu, so it must be real.
Well, in The Patriot, that guy just dispatched a whole bunch of people. Remember?
That was actually kind of based on a real guy.
Okay. Well, it happened in that movie.
What happens is when you have a weapon that can fire only one shot, and then you have someone with a sword come in and just go boom, 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 boom. It is possible, but 11 men's a lot of people. Back to the story. He was pinned to his horse by an enemy bayonet.
Oh, wow.
So his leg into his thigh.
Ouch.
Pinned up against the horse. So it's in the horse, too.
Sounds really
painful. He
looked
at the man and roared at him to pull it out.
Pull it out or else.
The guy pulled it out, so he cleaved his head in two.
Well,
he killed him anyways.
Oh, yeah, I guess I would, too.
It's in the middle of a battle. I'm busy.
It's in the middle of a battle, and
he charged a British defensive square and was... So they would have these squares. It was basically a square of soldiers.
Okay.
And the commanding officer would be in the middle so he could see what was going on. It was a very offensive, very effective tactic most of the time. He charged it by himself because everyone else is, like, too scared. But this guy doesn't even know the meaning of the word fear.
Doesn't sound like it.
No. He was bayoneted in the hip. This excruciating wound caused him to pass out. Where he didn't see Greene's retreat. Greene retreated.
Oh, bummer.
Poor General Greene. And he was left in the battlefield. So he was, I kid you not, nursed back to health by a Quaker.
Sure.
Like, this movie stuff comes from real life.
Yeah.
And the Quaker's name was Robinson, who we should all, if we should find that man's family and be thankful that he existed.
Yeah.
Green found out about this, was happy, and he had a beautiful silver razor case made for Francisco, because everyone back then had their, mm-hmm. yeah, their, it was, you didn't have a beard back then. You shaved your face for the most part. Huh. And you kept your razor in a fancy case.
Okay. So that was like a nice gift then.
It was a very nice gift. So Peter was made a scout, which is a great honor. And he was still a private. And he turned down a commission to be an officer because he couldn't read.
Oh.
So he couldn't read, you know, tactics books. So, but no. Wait, there's more.
Okay.
This is like the Billy Mays of badassery.
Yeah.
So he was at Ben Ward's Tavern for the next moment of famous heroism. He was scouting ahead, stopped at Ben Ward's Tavern for a beer or water or whatever.
Yeah, Ben Ward's Tavern. I've been there. It's awesome.
You know, it's a chain of taverns, actually. It's a chain, yeah. It's a chain. You can stab British people there.
Awesome.
So, 8 enemy dragoons came up and demanded his silver belt buckles. And he said, no, that's a gift from a dear friend. I'm not giving them to him. These are not the same belt buckles as he had as a child. Okay. Well, one put his sword beneath his arm and said, I'm just going to take him from you. Went down to take him. He pulled the enemy soldier's sword out and cut his head off.
Wow.
Then grabbed another one and started killing him. And everyone else was just like, what? We're leaving. We're leaving now. We're leaving. This was fun. Now it's not fun anymore.
Right,
especially
exactly.
When a guy who's 6'6", 260, gets up and starts just cutting your friends. You're like, you know, I'm not thirsty anymore. I think there's another tavern around here.
I will get my beer elsewhere.
So the war ends. He's still a hero. After the war, he got an education.
Good.
He became an avid reader. He had been married 3 times. I don't know if there were divorces or death or what have you.
Yeah.
He had children, became very wealthy. Over time, he became better known as a gentle giant who fed the poor. He helped feed the poor, and if he had an elderly servant, he would leave the table to take food to them instead of making them. Yeah, this is very key. Donated tons of food to people. So he went from bad. He really does sound like a movie character.
He totally does. They should make a movie about him.
I want to go to Hollywood and pitch this. Yes. No joke.
Very interesting.
But in January 1831, Francisco developed an abdominal ailment, probably appendicitis, and he died in Richmond, Virginia on Sunday, January 16th, at the age of 70.
Well, 70's probably pretty good for back then.
Back then, 70 is very good.
Yeah.
Still, that was pretty sad. They had a high infant mortality rate, but once you got there, you almost guaranteed to hit 50.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
that's
true.
So he's like 90 today?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So that's good. He had a good life.
So.
What an interesting guy. What a great guy. Wow.
Analysis. What do you think is what made him such a hard charger?
You know, I don't know, because I'll be honest, I'm not really like that. I would have been the guy that got on the horse and took off. So
bye.
It's hard for me to, you know, I'd like to think
you
I
don't have
do
a
that,
you don't have a warrior ethos.
I don't think so. I mean, I've been in tough situations where I knew like I had no choice, that I had to keep going. So maybe it's like that. Maybe he just felt like he didn't have a choice. This is what I have to do.
In warrior ethos, you don't give yourself a choice.
Yeah.
You just tell yourself, I can, I will. I must do this. And also, probably because he was such a large, intimidating, powerful person.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I think what happens with people. He was an indentured servant, so he had to do stuff. He had to work.
Right.
And he probably was a terrible... This is something that you see. He was probably... And we've all experienced. He's probably a terrible blacksmith at first, because it's a skilled job.
Yeah.
Then he got better at it.
Yeah.
They worked harder and got better. They worked really hard and got better at it. Then he worked really, really hard and got better. He saw himself get stronger, smarter, more skilled. And being able to look back and say, I worked at something. I know I can do anything. Because if you can become a good blacksmith, you become a good soldier. Become a good soldier, you become a reader. You can become a good reader, you become rich. You become rich, you can do all this other stuff too.
Yeah.
So you logically teach yourself to be kind, to be your own teacher, to be kind, compassionate. Because one of the best pieces of advice I've ever got was, treat yourself like someone you care for and you want to see succeed. Don't treat yourself like someone you get frustrated and angry with. And that's something I bet he learned as a blacksmith.
Probably, yeah. Maybe he had good, like, mentors and things like that.
And it sounds like Judge Winston really cared for him as a son.
That's good.
So that's probably the good mentor he had as well.
Yeah. And some people are just, they just really exceed at what they're doing. Like, I had a friend, no matter what she did, she just really excelled at it. She just like hyper. I know. Just hyper focused or something. I'm not sure what it was, but everything she set out to do, she just did so well.
That's something. Yeah, there's no spelling error in her podcast notes.
No, probably not. She didn't have to look up Brandywine, Pennsylvania.
No. She was not forced to look up Brandywine, Pennsylvania.
I didn't force you. I was just like, where is that? And you didn't know off the top of your head. So you had to look it up.
So, we're being silly. So, you could have been that too. It could have been a genetic factor. But I think he thought it was his responsibility. Because when you're in a Revolutionary War, you're not doing this because you're making money. You're not a career soldier.
Right.
You're doing this because you believe in the cause. He probably felt it was his responsibility to do everything he could to further the cause, including picking up a 1,100-pound weapon and walking it over to a frickin' tree.
Yeah. That's furthering the cause for sure.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thank
you. That's our analysis. That's our armchair psychology for you.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for talking about this really amazing person. Glad to know about him.
My pleasure to do the research on him. Not a lot of people know who he is.
Yeah.
So,
spread the word.
Yeah. So this, spread the word. If you, by the way, we don't have a Patreon. We don't have any sponsors right now. But if you like the show and you do want to help us out, you can check out our store on Etsy where we make reenactment gear.
Ah.
So if you are a Renfest person, if you like reenacting stuff, buy some. Help us out. Help us pay for this. Actually does cost money, believe it or not. I know it sounds cheap and amateurish, but it's expensively cheap and amateurish.
Yes. But we like doing it.
We love doing it. I love doing it. So,
all right.
Thank you again.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. And
we will see you in the next episode.
We will.